Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here today on the Mark Steiner Show on your radio station right here in Baltimore. This the home of the 2016 Baltimore Mayoral Debate, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We begin our program today with Dr. Shannon Ledeau, who is an assistant scientist of disease ecology at the Baltimore Ecosystem Study and Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies. Dr. Shannon Ledeau, welcome. Good to have you here.
Hi. Thanks, Mark.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. Thank you.
So I know you work a lot with mosquitoes, which I want to get into. In Baltimore, working with communities. But everybody is kind of, in our world, obsessed, at least some people are, with the Zika virus and how that affects or doesn't affect Baltimore. But the one case I think that's been seen in Maryland that actually came from somebody who came up from Central America. But is there something to think about here in terms of the Zika virus in Baltimore, and what would that be?
Yeah, so we certainly do expect to see cases of Zika in Maryland and throughout the United States, as people travel to parts of the Caribbean and Central and South America where we know Zika is circulating. The question is whether or not we see that next case, whether or not we see local transmission, which means somebody comes in with the infection and a mosquito bites them and then bites somebody who hasn't traveled.
Oh.
And so that's how we assess whether or not there's real risk of local transmission that goes beyond the traveler.
So the local transmission could happen not because that particular mosquito is in Maryland, but because someone could come here with the infection, get bitten by a mosquito that's local, and transmit the disease.
Right.
Am I right?
You need both the infected traveler to come in and bring the disease. And then we do have mosquito species in Maryland and in Baltimore City that are perfectly capable of picking up the disease, the pathogen, from one person and then transmitting it to another person.
Hmm.
So Aedes albopictus, the Asian tiger mosquito, has been in Baltimore since the late 1980s. The population grew exponentially and in the early 2000s really started to be a problem across the city. It is in its native range, which is in Japan. It doesn't bite humans as often as it does in its new range in the U.S. and Europe. The new range is urban. It's cities. And so the mosquito bites what is most dominant. And so in cities, when humans are the dominant vertebrate, the Asian tiger mosquito bites humans. And that's what makes it a potential vector for something like Zika virus. If it bites two humans in a row and that first human has the virus, then it can pick it up and transmit it to the next human it bites.
But the Zika virus itself isn't contagious in terms of human to human.
There is some evidence that it is sexually transmitted.
I read that. That's right. Yeah.
Right. And so in that case, you might expect some risk if an infected traveler comes in with that person's immediate family. With somebody they might be sexually active with. But you wouldn't necessarily expect to see it take off in a neighborhood. The mosquito transmission is what would make it take off in a neighborhood, so that you would get several households that might get infected. The tiger mosquito doesn't fly that far. And so if you're bit by a tiger mosquito, the last person it was likely to bite was probably on your block.
Huh. So this leads to another piece here. And folks, do join us at 410-319-8888 as we talk with Dr. Shannon Ledeau, who you'll be hearing as well soon on an episode of Soundbites, who's doing some really fascinating work in the west side of our town. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner, log on to our Facebook pages. But 410-319-8888, if you have the time to give us a call this morning as we talk in this first segment with Dr. Shannon Ledeau. So that's interesting in the context of communities that are very tight in terms of space with lots of people.
Yes,
right.
And you need somebody to bring the virus in, and that can be, somebody who's traveled. The thing with the Zika virus is that some 80% of people who are infected don't show any signs.
Huh.
So it's not necessarily going to be evident that there's somebody who's sick with Zika virus, and it's not necessarily going to be the kind of outbreak that causes a lot of illness. Of course, why Zika has become the concern that it is the birth defect risk.
That's the main, right. So that's the main issue with Zika. It's not somebody who becomes fatally ill, but is transmitting it to a fetus.
Yes. Right now, that looks like, the risk that's really drawing public concern, public health concern.
So one of the things here that I think that is I'd like to explore for a moment, coming back to Zika and what Maryland does to kind of address this potential danger, especially in the coming months, is the work you've done around mosquitoes and in poor working class communities in Baltimore City, that the relationship between poverty and this transmission of disease.
Yes. So what we've done is we've approached it from the perspective that even if the Asian tiger mosquito doesn't carry a virus, it's a huge nuisance in neighborhoods. When we interview people across different types of neighborhoods, from poor working class up through the wealthier neighborhoods in West Baltimore, three out of four people tell us that mosquitoes have been bothersome and that they change how they're using the outdoors. They make people not want to go outdoors as much, or instead of going out back, they'll go out front and sit on the stoop where it's too hot and there's not enough shade for the mosquitoes. So we've approached it from that perspective and looked at where the mosquitoes are breeding and what causes kind of spatial differences in where you're more likely to get bit by mosquitoes. And there are these particular mosquitoes breed in small containers of water. So anything that holds water for up to a week can breed hundreds of mosquitoes. We're talking paper cups that get discarded, or bird baths, or gutters, and of course abandoned tires. And so neighborhoods that have a lot more discarded and unmanaged habitat in garbage have more mosquitoes that are being bred. And so there's more likelihood that they're going to come across mosquitoes in those neighborhoods when they're outside. However, the risk of something like Zika across the neighborhoods is a little more nuanced than that. In order to have a viral transmission occur, you need the mosquitoes both to be abundant and to actually bite humans. And again, the tiger mosquito is opportunistic. It's going to bite the vertebrate that it runs into first. And so when we look at abundance, we definitely find that there are more mosquitoes in the poorer neighborhoods that have more abandoned buildings and vacant lots that are kind of semi-permanent dump sites. And I want to be clear that a lot of these dump sites aren't the local residents just littering. They're actually people are dumping things illegally, both garbage bags, but also piles of tires. And, we have a pile of toilets that we've sampled multiple times. And that's, that's not some resident down the road that dumped their 13 toilets in a vacant lot. And so you get a lot more mosquitoes in those neighborhoods, especially when there's been enough rain. But when we look at what they've been biting, they're biting humans, but they're also biting a lot of rats. And so we get a clear signal that the rat populations in those neighborhoods are also higher, and that the mosquitoes in some blocks run into rats before they run into humans. And so even though there's more mosquitoes, the risk of viral transmission is a little more nuanced, because if a mosquito bites a rat, then it's not. In order to transmit something like Zika virus, it has to bite two humans in a row. And so if it bites a human and then bites a rat, then you don't see transmission. And so it's more likely to have... Actually, I'll just say it's unclear. The risk is a little more nuanced than just there's a lot more mosquitoes, so the risk is higher. I still think that there's enough more mosquitoes that in some blocks we see more human biting in the lower-income neighborhoods.
So, I mean, it's interesting the way you describe this in our city of Baltimore, just here before I open the phones, because when you read what's going on with the Zika virus around the world, in Brazil and Puerto Rico and other places, that the focus is on poorest communities and mosquitoes breeding larvae in tires and other abandoned areas and abandoned buildings where there's pools of water that, that accumulate because of the abandoned buildings. And so that in as many ways is translated to Baltimore.
Yes.
That same, those same conditions.
Yes. You know, a lot of times we hear, well, you know, these mosquito outbreaks aren't going to be a problem in the U.S. because residents in the U.S. are generally behind screens and AC and have AC. So they're not exposed in the ways that people are in the tropics. And for the most part, that's true. But for anyone who's worked across different neighborhoods in somewhere like Baltimore or Detroit or most of the cities across the U.S., the bigger cities, there are always neighborhoods where that's just not true. People, you know, are more likely to not have screens on their windows. They're more likely to need to be outside to actually regulate temperature. And they're in the same neighborhoods where we know breeding, mosquito breeding habitat is greatest, just like in many other countries across the world.
This is a great deal about our community here. Let me open the phones here. A number of people have called in to ask questions and have a comment, I think, as we explore the Zika virus, the poverty in our own communities and how the two are connected with Dr. Shannon Ladeau, who is Associate Scientist of Disease Ecology at the Baltimore Ecosystem Study and the Carey Institute for Ecosystem Studies. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can write to us at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888. Yema in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome, Yema.
Yes, I have problems with painting of the various viruses and basing it on economics. The first case of the West Nile virus was in West Baltimore in an upper middle class black neighborhood. The second case was in Charles Village, which in no way can be construed as a economically depressed community. And we did not see any cases in the low-income neighborhoods. And I would like for people who do these studies to start immediately pointing the finger at low-income people because they have common sense and do due diligence, too, just like other people do. But they need to stop painting these things as a low-income issue.
Let's just find what we say. Let me stay on the line for a minute. I mean, so let's talk about whether this question is a low income issue or a question of dislocation in certain neighborhoods. Let's wrestle with that kind of difference for a moment, Shannon.
Yeah, and I appreciate that comment, and I think that that is 100% true, and that's why I was really careful to say that that when we're talking about these breeding habitats, we're not talking about people who live in these neighborhoods creating breeding habitats. Oftentimes, the issue is more that in certain neighborhoods, there are kind of illegal dumping sites of piles of tires that have nothing to do with the people who live there. They're just because of having more vacant lots or more abandoned buildings, there's a difference in the neighborhood capacity for keeping eyes on all of those vacant lots, right? In some neighborhoods, if there was a vacant lot and somebody wanted to illegally dump a pile of tires, there would be more neighbors that whose houses abut that vacant lot just because there aren't as many vacant houses in some neighborhoods. So it's really a block-to-block issue, not around the income level of the people living there, but around the infrastructure investment and the abandonment degree within each neighborhood. The other thing I want to clarify is that with West Nile virus, so a lot of our control and surveillance has been set up in the U.S. for West Nile virus, which the mosquitoes that transmit West Nile virus are quite different in their habits from the mosquitoes that are active in something like Zika or chikungunya transmission, the viruses that can go from human to human via mosquito. And West Nile virus, in order to get... In order to be infected with West Nile virus, a mosquito needs to first bite a bird and pick up the virus and then bite a human. And so with spatial patterns of where we see West Nile virus, we expect to see those in places where there's more bird habitat, where there's more, where you have more trees. And so you have that interface between greater vegetation and human residences where you see West Nile virus. Whereas with Zika, something like Zika, you need to have the mosquito bite two humans in a row. And so you expect to see that happen more frequently in places where the mosquitoes are breeding, because, again, the Aedes mosquitoes don't fly that far. So it's got to be in a neighborhood where you have breeding habitat for the mosquitoes, and the most the vertebrate that they're most likely to bite is humans. And so that isn't necessarily suggesting that the neighborhoods with higher abandonment are at higher risk. And it certainly isn't trying to suggest that those neighborhoods have any responsibility for causing that risk. But what we actually see, so what we actually see is that there are neighborhoods, it's the mosaic of neighborhoods. And if you've got a block that has a lot of abandoned buildings with unmanaged habitat, like piles of tires and illegal dumping sites, you can get breeding during the early part of the season when there's enough water to fill those habitats. And so you expect to see a lot of mosquitoes there early in the season. If somebody arrived in that area infected with a virus, you could get local outbreaks of that virus because you've got enough mosquitoes. And we know that they will bite humans. However, if it's late July or August and it's really hot and it hasn't rained in a couple weeks, then you actually see that focus, the mosquito focus, shift over to blocks that have more people on them managing their yards. Because when it gets dry, people tend to go out and water gardens and water their plants. And so while there's no more water for breeding of mosquitoes in the more abandoned neighborhoods, late in the season, you see that shift to the blocks or the neighborhoods that have less abandonment and more people supplementing the water.
So it's interesting. I'm going to try to get one more caller in here in this segment. This has been fascinating to learn. 410-319-8888. Holly, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. I think that one of the callers seemed a little defensive about that, you know, feeling blamed for the problem. I think it's more about the issue of the educating ourselves about how to prevent the conditions that will create more higher populations of mosquitoes, which could then that will know no bounds in the city. And so it's really an issue that affects all of us in that regard. And I guess my main point is I would like to make people look at this as an issue in terms of what the future mayor is going to do with regard to the abandoned buildings, which really are so dangerous in so many ways. That's what the upshot of my comment. Thank you.
Holly, thanks so much for your call. Dr. Ledoux, a final thought on what Holly said and before we go?
No, I think that she has a good point, and there's a real opportunity here to think of the mosquitoes as a proxy for a bunch of issues that arise via the abandoned buildings and the sheer scope of vacancies across much of West Baltimore. You know, there's a huge opportunity for looking at the future and thinking about what the neighborhoods want those areas to look like, how they want to incorporate the green space that's inevitably going to replace a lot of the buildings. You know, what do they want that green space to look like? What will they, what do they see as the opportunities for recreation and nature in their environments? And there are ways to do that really do also combat the current issues with rats and mosquitoes.
But
they have to be neighborhood specific. The communities have to be involved in figuring out what they want their outdoor space to look like, what's most functional for that community, and with the right resources, I think certainly the communities we've worked with have really great ideas, and most of those involve what they think is sustainable in their community and sustainable in both maintenance and in prohibiting future illegal dumping, which will naturally reduce mosquito breeding and rat populations.
This has been fascinating. I really appreciate you and the work you're doing, Dr. Shannon Ledoux. I think you really very clear in what this is about and what we need to think about. And I think the having deeper conversations, not just around mosquitoes, but just around the whole questions of the health and our citizens and poverty and what those conditions breed, not because of the people, but because of the conditions people are forced to live within, is really very important to do. Dr. Chandler Doe is the Associate Scientist of Disease Ecology at the Baltimore Ecosystem Study and the Carey Institute for Ecosystem Studies. Dr. Chandler Doe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
Talk to you soon. Thank you. We're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, we are going to come back and talk about the controversy over Northwood Shopping Center, which in many ways is emblematic of some of the issues facing many neighborhoods around development. So stay with us and join that conversation.